Rabbi Reis that he thought that the volume, the topics in volume 2 will sell better than volume 1, which is more boring. So start with the interesting ones. So next year, Be'ezus Hashem, we'll have volume 1. It's written, just test it. Okay, so this week's Parsha is Parsha's Mishpatim. You all have Chumashim. And I wanted to talk with you about three or four topics, mostly because I couldn't decide which ones to talk about. And each one of these is really a whole shiur in and of itself, but we will have to do each one, I think, incompletely, but it's very interesting nonetheless. So maybe we'll even start with the very first pasuk and the first Rashi's. So this is in Sefer Shmos, Parak Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Ve'ela ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. What does that mean? These are the mishpatim. Mishpatim oftentimes refers to mitzvos whose reasons we understand or are perhaps intuitive. And in fact, we know most of Parshas Mishpatim deals with civil law, with bein adam l'chaveiro halachos, that we do intuitively understand. It is interesting that sprinkled throughout are some mitzvos that are bein adam l'makom. The Ramban discusses how we have parallels to the Aseres HaDibros in Parshas Mishpatim, but it is primarily what we would classify as Mishpatim. Now Rashi begins by noting the usage of the letter Vav in the first word. Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tasim lefneham. And these, why does it begin with ve'ele, with Vav? Says Rashi, kol makom shenemar ele, pasal as harishonim, ve'ele mosif al harishonim. So Rashi here is quoting a Medrash Tanchuma that ve'ele with the Vav comes to add on to the previous ones, meaning Parshas Yisro. Ma Rishonim Misinai, Af Elo Misinai, just like the original ones are from Sinai, so too these are from Sinai. Now, what's the Chiddush of Ma HaRishonim Misinai, Af Elo Misinai? So I think on a homiletical level, the answer is that Mishpatim are, like we said, intuitive mitzvos, mitzvos that relate to Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and the like, and you might have thought that they need not be from Sinai, and that's for a couple of reasons. First of all, you might have thought that these are things that we could figure out on our own. When it comes to ritual mitzvos, so obviously those come from Sinai. But when it comes to civil law, you need not look back to Sinai. Sadly, many people are very medaktik on Hilchos Shabbos or Kashrus, and not so medaktik on cheating or stealing or the like. And the pasuk stressing, no. Ma elu misinai, af elu misinai. Just like we should remember that these mitzvos come from Sinai. You can't be a good Jew just by observing a ritual law. You have to observe dine mamonos. So that's one point. And to add on to that, that we should understand that the dine mamonos of the Torah are not the same as other forms of dine mamonos. We say in Tehillim, it's part of every day's davening, lo asachem l'chogai, u'mishpatim bal yida'um, halleluka, that Hashem did not do this to any other nation. In other words, He gave us the Torah, chukim u'mishpatim li'Yisrael. He gave both chukim and mishpatim to Israel. He didn't do that to any other nation. No other nation has the Torah. Mishpatim bal yida'um. He didn't even give them mishpatim. What does that mean? In other words, you might have thought that Hashem gave us the chukim, but mishpatim are equally shayach to the rest of the world. They're, after all, reflecting universal concepts. What this pasuk highlights is that's not the case. That even dinei mamonos, though these are laws we can usually understand and intuit, in terms of understanding many of their reasons, but not entirely, that even Mishpatim, the Torah's system of Mishpatim, of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave no other nation a system of ethics and justice and the like. And in fact, I think as we discussed a year ago or so, when we did the series of Jewish business ethics, that is in fact one of the things that, the areas where I think we could most appreciate Torah. When someone does not have the Torah, so even if they're trying to be a good, moral, and ethical person, but there are no concrete ways to figure out what's right and what's wrong. There are certain basics, let's say, the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, so you can't kill and you can't steal and the like, but so many questions are so difficult to answer. I remember there used to be, I think there still is, in the New York Times Magazine, a little column called The Ethicist. It used to be answered by a fellow named Randy Cohen. And he would be asked ethical questions, and he would give an answer. The answers were oftentimes very interesting and pretty reasonable, but they were all beichsvaros. In other words, you could half the time make the opposite case. Whatever it feels like. There's no system. And even if you have a system, so there are many different systems of ethics. You could study a deontological ethics or utilitarian ethics, all sorts of ways of systems of figuring out, but you can't really prove one thing or the other. You could argue from today or tomorrow. And what we thank Hashem for in that mizmor is thank you, Hashem, not just for giving us chukim, but giving us mishpatim. Because we, in Parshas Mishpatim, throughout the Torah, have a way of figuring out whether something is right or what wrong. And that's the Eila Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lefnehem, that this is Mosif al Inyan Rishon, that this too comes from Sinai. A, you can't just make it up, but B, even Mishpatim, even this aspect of the Torah, we have to look to Halacha, we have to look to Sinai to figure out what's moral, what's ethical in the realm of Dinei Mamonos. Now, there's a very interesting medrash over here on the beginning of this pasuk, which has two perspectives on this question of what exactly is derived from Ve'ela HaMishpatim, that word Ve'ela. And interestingly enough, neither of the two perspectives seems to perfectly correspond to Rashi, though we'll see perhaps he does take a perspective. It's very interesting. It says like this, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Elu Mosifin al Ha'alyonim, Ma'alyonim Misinai, Af Tachtonim Misinai. So Rishmol's view seems to be very similar to what Rashi says, that just like the above laws are from Sinai, meaning Parshas Yisro, so too the present laws are from Sinai, namely Parshas Mishpatim. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ve'ele HaMishpatim Lama Ne'amar, Lefishu Omer, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, Ve'amar Talehem. The Torah says that Hashem instructed Moshe to teach Bnei Yisrael. Ein li ala pamachas, minayin, shana, v'shalosh, the Reva Achilamdu. How do we know that you have to keep on teaching until they know? Meaning to say, I'm a teacher, so I'll teach my material, and that's it. I'm Pater. Right? How do we know that I'm not allowed to do that? I have to teach it and repeat it again and again until they understand. Obviously, sometimes in a classroom setting, that could be challenging. Half the people understand, or most of the people understand, one person doesn't. Maybe part of the achrayus of a teacher is to not limit their teaching to the classroom. How do we know that a teacher must keep on teaching until everybody understands? Talmud Lomar, V'lamda es b'nei Yisrael, yachol emeidim v'lo shonin. Maybe it's enough to just teach them, but they don't really have to understand it. Talmud Lomar, sima b'fihim. Yachol shonin v'lo yodin, Talmud Lomar v'eila mashbatim. So that's what our pasuk teaches us. Archam lefneihem kishulchan aruch, present it to them like a set table. Kinyan shenemar, atah reis al adas. Now, that interpretation is also more or less quoted in our Rashi. Look at the next Rashi. Asher tasim lefneihem, you shall place before them. Interestingly enough, Rashi does not derive it from in the way Rabbi Akiva derives it, though that might depend on how you understand the Gomer. But the simple understanding is Rabbi Akiva is not deriving it from there. Though maybe he is. Asher tasim lefneihem, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, lo tala al daitcha lomar, esh nolema perek v'halacha beis o gimel pa'amim. Don't imagine that you could just think I'll teach it to them two or three times. Ad shetei shedura b'fihem k'mishnasa. Ve'eni matriach atzmi la'vinem tameh ha'davar u'peirusha. Maybe you'll think that I'll just teach them the material two or three times so they know it. But I don't have to teach them the reasons. L'kach ne'amar, asher tasim lefneihem k'shulchan ha'aruch u'muchan lechol lefnei ha'adam. Like a set table ready to eat before everybody. Now this is from a mechilta, it's from which is what we just quoted, but a little differently, in the Gemara in Erevin, which might be a little more precise. This, by the way, is very interesting in a number of ways. If you just teach material without teaching the reasons, without the understanding, so the students can't really understand it. When you teach halacha, as Rashi is telling us, you have to explain it. And they have to understand it. Even though in our parsha we have Nasa v'Nishma, but it's the responsibility of the teacher to make sure it's taught in a way that's understood. Anyway, this drasha seems to be more along the lines of what Rabbi Akiva darshins in the Mechilta, which is interesting, that Rashi quotes both the interpretation of Rabbi Shmuel and the interpretation of Rabbi Akiva, though in the Mechilta, they seem to be disagreeing. And if we look further in the Mechilta, we'll see that there actually is somewhat of a disagreement here. Perhaps, now's not the time to get into the details, but somewhat of a disagreement about whether all mitzvos were taught at Sinai, or whether the details were taught at Sinai and Moshe continued, the Klalim were taught at Sinai, and the details were taught afterwards. Yor Chaim HaKadosh is very bothered by Rashi's amalgamation of the sources here, and he thinks perhaps this is a stira to what Rashi says in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, where he says, Kol HaTorah Kula Pratos Evedictu Ka'anemu B'Sinai, and the like. And perhaps another time we could discuss, it's in Volume 3. I haven't written it yet. But anyway, another time we could discuss when exactly the details of the Torah were taught. It's a very important question. For example, even though it says that everything was taught at Sinai, well, how would you explain, for example, Pesach Sheni, or the story of Benos Tzlafchat, where we seem to have halachos being taught later? The Ramban deals with this, there's the Chazon Ish and the like. It's a very interesting question, when exactly all the details of the Torah were given. Everybody agrees, both opinions agree that they were given by Moshe at some point, but when they were given in terms of their details is a discussion. And there's also a broader question though again, not for tonight, as to how to understand the development of some of the halachos. Chidushim, what role do chidushim play? If everything was given at Sinai, what does that mean? So the development of the halacha is something very interesting and relates very much to the Rashi's of this week's Parsha, at the beginning of this week's Parsha, but I think we'll go on to the next topic. So that was Ha'ara number one. Ha'ara number two I wanted to discuss with you is the Pasuk of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Now, I think we talked a little bit about this once before. I don't remember what we said. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we did Mutar L'Shanos V'Pnei HaShalom and the Gemara and Yevamos and the like, and the Rashi at the end of Parshas Vayechi, did Yosef know or did he not know? I wanted to talk about it in a slightly different context. And I think we haven't discussed this aspect of it, but if we did, stop me and move on to the next topic. The question is like this. We noted a couple of weeks ago that even though the Torah prohibits lying, there's an exception. What was the exception we discussed? Motel Hashanah's Meshal, right? You're allowed to lie for the sake of peace. Any other exceptions? Any other exceptions that you could think of? Other times that you're allowed to lie? Okay, Pikuach Nefesh, fine. But that's not particularly exciting because you could do anything for Pikuach Nefesh almost, except for a couple of exceptions. Right? So what else? Any other exceptions? Let's say... Sorry?
Shmir Salashon, or would that fall under Shalom?
Well, I don't know what you mean by Shmir Salashon.
Like times when you can either hold something back or like not give all the details.
Okay, so sometimes that's Shalom. But that's, I think, a good point. Let's say somebody asks me a question that's really none of their business. Do I have to end? Now, obviously I could say it's none of your business. But let's say I don't want to do that. I think that being evasive would be rude, or it would make me uncomfortable by being evasive or the like. So am I allowed to lie? What do you say? So there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, an interesting Gemara. It's Bava Metzia Chav Gimel on the base. And the Gemara says, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Behani Tlas Mili, Avidi Rabbanan de Mishano Bimilayu. There are three things that even Talmidei Chachamim lie about. Or, to put it a little differently, someone who is a Talmud Chacham is someone who's always honest, with the possible exception of these three cases. Number one, b'meseches. What does that mean? That means that somebody asks me, have I learned Erchin? So the real answer is no. But even if the answer was yes, I could be humble. And I could say no. In other words, you're allowed to lie for the sake of humility. Number two, uvipurya. Purya literally means... Rashi says, Shimashta mitascha. Did you have Tashma Shamita? But really what it refers to is tznias. If somebody asks me a question that's none of their business, it's private matter. So one is allowed to lie. And finally, number three, Be'ushpiza. What does that mean? Let's say somebody is... asks me where I went to lunch last week. I know they're a bit of a nudnik. So if I tell them, they're going to drive my hosts crazy. So I'm allowed to lie. Say, yeah, I ate at home last week. Be careful, you know. Lying always, even when permissible, oftentimes doesn't work. But you get into trouble, one thing leads to another. But fundamentally, you'd be allowed to lie in that case to, let's say, make sure that your hosts aren't taken advantage of or harmed in some way. So now we have four exceptions. It's an interesting question why this isn't included in Shalom and the like. The Rif and the Rishonim deal with that. And here, I would ask you, how do we know? Why? Why are you allowed to lie? For Shalom, as we talked about several weeks ago, at least they have a source. Remember, the Torah learned that out from Avram Avinu, Hashem's lying to Avram Avinu, Adoni Zaken. We learned it out from the Bnei Yaakov lying to Yosef, Avicha Tziva Lefnei Moso Lemor. They're sources. But here, there is no source given. Seems to be a Svara. Well, if it's a Svara, how could that be? So we have to ask, I guess, a much more basic question, which is, does the Torah prohibit lying? What do you think? Does the Torah prohibit lying?
The Torah's definition of truth isn't like a black and white.
Okay.
It happened, didn't happen.
So what's the Torah's definition of truth such that this is okay?
When a person is...
Somebody asks me... why I didn't come to Night Seder last night. And it's a private matter, so I tell them I wasn't feeling well. I was feeling great. I was feeling amazing. But I'm allowed to say that. So how does that correspond with any definition of truth?
And we learned this with Yaakov and the Brachos also.
Yes. So that is a very interesting point, what you're saying. Rav Dessler, for example, makes a point along the lines of what you were saying, that the Torah's definition of truth is not the correspondence theory of truth, that it corresponds to reality, but it relates to Ratzon Hashem. So maybe this is Ratzon Hashem and it's okay. That's a very big chiddush, and one has to think about that very carefully, because it could be used to justify many different things. But we'll assume that you're correct for the time being. But it still doesn't answer my question. Because if the Torah says you may not lie, so that's still a lie.
You say not to lie, though.
So what does it say?
To stay away from the falsehood.
Okay, so let's take a look at what the Torah actually says. Excellent point, Liba. And it's in our parsha, which is why we're discussing it now. So it's in Perek Chav Gimel, of Sefer Shmos, Pasuk Zayin. Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Zayin. Let's take a look. Let's even start from the previous Pasuk. Always best to get some context. Lo satem mishpat evyoncha berivo. Do not pervert the judgment of your destitute person in his grievance. Midvar shaker tirchak. Stay away from falsehood. V'naki v'tzadik al tarog. Ki lo atzadik rasha. Do not execute the innocent or the righteous, for I shall not exonerate the wicked. V'sholchad lo tikach. Do not accept a bribe. For the bribe will blind those who see and corrupt words that are just. So, Liba's suggestion is, the pasuk says, Midvar Shekir Tirchak. It doesn't say, Losa Shakaru, at least not over here. It might in another context, in the context of taking a false oath. But here it doesn't say, do not lie. It says, stay away from falsehood. Now, what's interesting is that if you remember a couple of weeks ago when we discussed this, I think it was Parshas Vayechi, we noted how that formulation might indicate an expansiveness. Not only is it usher to lie, but any type of misleading is usher. If you remember, we saw Gemara at the time from Masechah Shvuos, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, that noted that if I want to bring a student of mine to court such that the person that I am suing will think that I have a witness on my side. I don't ask my student to lie, chas v'shalom. Let him just come to court. Walk with me. Don't say anything. Just accompany me. And that'll intimidate the other party. That's midvar sheker tirchak. From the fact that the Torah doesn't say, don't lie, it says tirchak. Any form of falsehood is aser. So, what would you like to say?
From the context, it also sounds like it's only talking about quirky.
Fabulous. So that's the answer. That's the answer. And the Ibn Ezra on this pasuk makes this point exactly. In other words, this pasuk is only stated in the context of court. And that's exactly why we read the pasuk before and after. The pasuk before is addressing judges. The second half of the pasuk, the Nakiv Tzadik Al Tarog, is addressing judges. So is the next pasuk, V'Shofad Lo Tikach. So the context here is in the context of court. There's a chumrah here. Not only can't you not, is it usher to lie, but also you may not commit any type of falsehood or misleading or the like. However, that being the case, does this pasuk tell me anything about lying outside of court? No. So even though in the Marvelous Midos Machine it says don't, you know, lie about who spilled the soup, the milk on the kitchen floor, and it says Midvar Sheker Tirchak, never tell a lie, I hate to break it to them, but they seem to be quoting the wrong pasuk. Yes?
Then how do you apply it to the story of Avram and Sarah in the first place?
Does the pasuk say anything about Midvar Sheker Tirchak over there?
No, but the
fact that
we said
Mipnei HaShalom. Motor L'shanos Mipnei HaShalom, exactly. So what the Gemara implies is that usually L'shanos is Aser, Mipnei HaShalom is Mutter.
So where did the Gemara get it from?
Where do we know that usually that L'shanos is usually Aser? That's the question. Since it's not Midvar Sheker Tirchak, right? So how do we know it's Aser? How do we know it's Aser? The Marvelous Midos Machine. I'm a big fan of Marvelous Midos. This is.
Unless it's the fact that that one story that Hashem did the opposite.
Well,
to change the story.
That could be because that's not a lie to anything. Because maybe it's always true, or maybe it's just a good idea, or that, I don't know anything, right? From the fact that, yesterday I told the truth 5 times and I lied once, you can't be medayak anything about whether it's mutter or us or the like. So we'll see. There's going to be a yeshiv from Midvar Sheker for Marvelous Midos. Right? They're not. They do know what they're doing. But we'll get back to that. But that's the question. So it seems like we assume, as you're pointing out correctly, that it's aser to lie, but we can't derive it from the pasuk of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. How do we know it's aser to lie? So there's many places in the Torah where various types of lies are clearly prohibited, like we said, los hashakru in terms of oaths. Obviously, in the context of business, any type of stealing or cheating is wrong. Hin tzedek shehei hein chashol shalcha hein v'lav shalcha lav, that at least when people are counting you on you and relying upon you, you have to keep your word. And there are many, many places where the Torah seems to clearly prohibit various forms of lying. But the question that we're dealing with is the question of lying when it doesn't harm anybody. I go ahead and I tell you that last Sunday I went fishing and I caught a 36-inch bass, when in fact I caught a 3-inch bass. And maybe it wasn't even a bass. It was a lobster. Right? So that lie doesn't harm anybody. Clearly lying is wrong when you're going to hurt somebody financially, emotionally, all of that. But what about when, I think it's called a white lie, doesn't hurt anybody, doesn't cause any harm? So is there any pasuk that prohibits that? Answer is, as far as I know, there's not. And that explains our question. Why is it that there's so many exceptions? Why are you allowed to lie for the sake of peace, for the sake of humility, for the sake of modesty? Because there's no iser. Well, there's no iser, so then I have a different question. Why is it usser? So the answer is, because it's wrong. We know it's wrong for many reasons. The Ramchal stresses it's wrong because we have a mitzvah, Lidamos L'Hashem, V'alachta B'drachav, to follow God's actions. And this is where the point you made is correct. Hashem, Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, MS. It's wrong because, as Rabbeinu Yonah stresses, if you lie about things that don't cause any harm, you're going to become a dishonest person and lie about things that are harmful. Society rests upon credibility and truth and the like. There's so many reasons why it's totally wrong. But since there's no formal prohibition, therefore, when it comes up against other Torah values, then we sometimes say that those other values trump the value of peace. You see, if there was an Isser in the Torah, if there's a pasuk that says, thou shalt not lie, so then we would say, okay, obviously modesty is important, but you can't violate an Isser for modesty. You can't be Mechal Shabbos or eat non-kosher for Shalom. So if somebody goes ahead and offers me something that isn't kosher, and I know that if I don't eat it, they'll be very offended. If it's actually not kosher, I still can't eat it. We don't say. You know, you could ask, well, if it's mutter to lie for peace, why isn't it mutter to eat treif for peace? The answer is that the Torah didn't say don't lie. The Torah did say don't eat treif. So here we have a different model for solving a conundrum, a problem. We have the value of peace. We have the value of truth. The Torah clearly values both. What we learn from the story of Avram and Sarah, or Yosef and the brothers, is that the value of truth sometimes trumps, the value of peace sometimes trumps the value of truth. And when it comes to these cases from the Gemara and Bava Metzia, like modesty, so there it's not necessarily a mitzvah to lie for the sake of modesty, but you're allowed to lie for the sake of modesty, which means that the value of modesty and the value of truth are both significant to our values, and therefore it's left to the person to decide, but they are allowed to decide that, yes, I am going to put the value of modesty ahead of the value of truth, and therefore somebody asks me a question that's a private matter, that's none of their business, I'm allowed to lie. And that's because the Torah doesn't permit it. This goes back to what we started discussing at the very beginning of the Parsha, which is the Torah's guidelines to addressing these very difficult dilemmas. So that is the answer to this question. Now, what's very interesting, and this brings us back to the Marvelous Midos song, is a Gemara in Ksubos. The Gemara in Ksubos, the Mishnah in Ksubos, is one that you all know, but only half of it. The Mishnah starts off, Ketzad Mirakdin Lifnei Hakala. So what comes next? Ketzad Mirakdin Lifnei Hakala? Kalana V'chazuda, right? Ah. Ketzin Raklaf Neakala, Meshamai Omrim, Kala Kemoshehi. What does that mean? It means that when you go to a wedding, you're supposed to dance before the Kala. What does that mean? It's not just talking about the Kazatska. It means that you should do things to make the Kala feel good. And for that matter, the Chassan feel good. That's our job at weddings, to make the Chassan and the Kala feel good. Feel good about getting married, feel good about each other. It's hard to get married. You're a little nervous. So the mitzvah is, part of the mitzvah is to make them feel really good about each other. So one thing that includes is to compliment the kala. So Meshamai says, what do? You find something nice about the kala, and you say it. Uveis hillel omrim, kala na'a v'chasuda. All brides are beautiful. Go say how she's beautiful. It's actually very interesting. Usually we wouldn't do these types of things. It's a lack of tznius. The truth is that there are certain aspects of tznius that would normally be inappropriate, that for the sake of being a sameach hasan mekala, we do at weddings. The Gemara talks about certain wedding practices in those days that, again, were certainly not the norm, but were done for the sake of Simchas HaChas HaMekal, and the truth is we do the same thing nowadays. I don't know how many people, you know, go up and comment about the appearance of the Kala, but we do actually think that bringing that shalom, that simcha, is so important. One way or the other, Beis Hillel says you should say to every Kala, Kala na chasuda. Part of that is because it's true, you just have to see it. But anyway, Beis Shammai says back to him, Amru lahem, Beis Shammai le Beis Hillel, Hare she'aisa chigeres osuma, Omrim la Kala na v'chasuda. Let's imagine she's not beautiful. So would you say to her Kala na v'chasuda? V'atora amra midvar sheker tirchak. So what's the problem with this?
It's not gorgeous.
Right, this goes against our whole theory. Of course, we've now solved the problem for the marvelous Midos machine, except that it seems to accord with the opinion of Beis Shammai. Now, how does Beis Hillel respond? Amru lahem, Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, l'dvareichem, mi shelakach mekach ramen ashok, yishavchanu beinav, o yigananu beinav. Let's say I go shopping, and I buy this tie. Even better, I buy this book called Illuminations in Jewish Thought. I think that's what it's called. and Sarah wrote the title. So anyway, and I say, what do you think of the book? Lousy book. See, Shabchan, somebody says. So you know they got ripped off. It's not really such a good book. It's just a lot of pages, mostly just footnotes. So should you tell them the truth? No! Yishabchanu beinav. Of course you should tell them, wow, what a great book you got. It's amazing. Regardless of the truth value of that statement. So, that's the answer. That's what Beis Hillel says. Now, what's the problem with this answer? It's very nice, but what about the pasuk? What about the pasuk? So the Meseches Kala actually continues the conversation with Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, in which they understand Beis Hillel actually responds to that point. Beis Hillel says, look at the context of the pasuk. Look at the end of the pasuk. It's about court cases. So what was Beis Shammai thinking? Maybe Beis Shammai thought it's a categorical prohibition against lying, like the marvelous Midos machine. Or maybe Beis Shammai held that you see that the value of truth from that pasuk is so significant that we shouldn't have made a takana to lie. Some of the Rishonim explained that way. One way or the other, though, the answer is, like we've been saying, that Midvar Sheker Tirchak doesn't actually prohibit lying. The Torah values truth, and telling the truth is very important. But when it comes up against something like here, possibly offending the Kala, or not at least taking advantage of the opportunity to bring the most Simchas Chasen to Kala, then it would be okay. Now, I want to see one last source with you on this topic before we go on to our next topic. Yeah.
So what was the answer again?
The answer is...
No, but Beis Hillel gave...
So Beis Hillel says exactly the answer that you said, that this pasuk is stated in the context of court.
So why don't they just... Oh, because they wouldn't say Mivnei Shalom because it wouldn't answer the question.
Well, that is basically what they're saying. They're basically saying it's Motel Shalom Mivnei Shalom. But they're adding that the reason why that's okay is because of the context of the pasuk. So here's a Gemara in Yevamos. It's not talking about lying at the wedding, lying in years following the wedding. A very interesting Gemara. Rav Ave Kametzara Le Divisu. Rav was being vexed by his wife. Kyamarla Avidi Li Tlufchi Avdale Chimtzi. When he asked for lentils for supper, so she would make peas. Chimtzi, avdala tilufchei. When he asked for peas, she would make lentils. So, whatever Rav asked for, his wife would do the opposite. Ki gadol chia brei, when his son Chia grew up a little bit, apichla, he had a great chap, he started reversing it. So, Mrs. Rav would say to Chia, what does Dad want for supper? So if Dad asks for chicken, he would say meat. If he asked for meat, he would say chicken. So Amarlay, Eliyalach. So Rav says to his son, wow, look, things are getting better between me and Mom. She's finally making me what I like. Amarlay, Anahu dikafichna, so he spilled the beans. He's not a good liar. He said, I'm actually reversing it. Amr lay, hainu deka amri inshi, denafak minach tama milfach. This is what people say. It's like a folk expression. The one who comes from you teaches you good sense. But then he said, atlo tavid hachi, you shouldn't do this. Shinemar, limdu lishonam daber sheker hava. It's a pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Literally it means they have taught their tongue to speak lies, and continues, they weary themselves to commit iniquity. So what do you think about this Gemara? Does this correspond with what we're saying or not? It's a contradiction, Liba is saying. Why?
This is B'nai
HaShalom, sure. So why do you think Rav told his son not to do this? So look at the pasuk. Let's quote it. Let's read it again. Limdu lashonam daber shaker. What does that imply?
Yeah. Training yourself.
Don't get into the habit of lying. While it is true that there are times that one is allowed to lie, lying is a dangerous thing. Because every time you lie, you become accustomed to lying. A person must have a natural anathema to lies. You have to feel really awkward and bad and dirty when you lie. And if you feel that way, then even if occasionally you have to lie because it's warranted, you won't become a liar. But limdu lashonam daber sheker, if you lie a lot, even if when you start off it's only when it can be justified, but you'll be desensitized to the truth. You'll get accustomed to lying. And the consequences of that are very grave. Lying is addictive. And lying is particularly addictive because it's sometimes permissible. When it comes to stealing, so hopefully, we all feel like it's wrong because it's basically never, ever, ever okay. You said before, maybe to save somebody's life, okay. How often does that happen? You need to steal to save somebody's life, right? So we don't, for the most part, have too many temptations when we're in Rite Aid to, you know, pocket a candy bar or whatever it is. But maybe there are other types of thefts that are harder. People do struggle with more. But for the most part, it's not something that we ever do. But this is something that, since occasionally it's okay, so it doesn't seem like it's so bad. And if it becomes habitual, then you could become addicted. And that's what Rav's saying. Look, I would rather suffer with the supper that I'm not interested in than you, my son, becoming used to being a liar. You have to be careful. In fact, this the Chafetz Chaim says, explains a very, at first glance, problematic Rashi. We know that when Yaakov pretends to be Esav to get the bracha, so he says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. And Rashi comments, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Wasn't, in a certain sense, a lie. I am I. Esav's your Bechor. Now, is that a lie? Certainly not permitted. It's deception. He was clearly deceiving his father. So, why was it okay for him to deceive his father? Because of the nevuah, let's say, that Rivka got, that he was supposed to get the bracha. Fine. So then what's the point of saying this? So the Chafetz Chaim explains that when a person is not justified in lying, so of course, even if the literal technical meaning of your words is okay, you could come up with some lawyerly interpretation such that your words are accurate. If you're misleading, it's totally wrong. But if you are allowed to lie, for whatever reason, because of shalom, or because of tznius, or in Yaakov's case, because of the nevuah, so then if you could technically use words that on some level might be true, it's true you're misleading the other person, but at least technically they're right, it's better to do so. Not because that makes it not lying, but hopefully that will remind you that this is something that I shouldn't be doing, and it will prevent your words, your actions from becoming habitual, from losing that sensitivity to the truth. And that's exactly what is going on here. Looks like we don't have time for my third and fourth topic for today, but I guess I'll mention one more interesting ha'ara relating to Ekamar Nivamos, the story of Rav and Rabbi Chiya. So, there are some mefarshim that make the following deal. What did Rav say to Chiya? At lo aved hachi. You shouldn't say this to your mother. Implying that I could. Well, why would that be? Because if you say it, you're lying. If Mrs. Rav says to Chiya, ask your father if he wants chicken or meat. And he comes back, and Mrs. Rav says to Chiya, what did Dad say? And you say chicken when he said meat. So that's a lie. But if Rav had said it, so Mrs. Rav says to Rav, what should I make for supper? And he says, peas. So that's not a lie. Now, of course, he's thinking that if I say peas, she's going to make lentils. But he hasn't actually lied. So, that's what perhaps you could learn from the Me'iri and the Chida. Now, why is that interesting? So, what's the idea behind it? The idea behind it is that you're really communicating what you want. It's just in a backhanded manner. Let's give an example. I'm always running late. My wife, she's much better at being on time. So if I ask her, what time should we be ready to go out tonight? We have a bar mitzvah. What time? So she wants to leave at 7:15. She knows. She says, 7:15, I'm running late. We won't be ready till 7:30. So she says, 7 o'clock. So maybe you could argue that's okay. That's exactly what Rav is saying. Because you're communicating your message without any lies. If I ask, what time does it send the invitation? Then that there's no possibility. But if I ask, you know, what time should we be ready? So she knows that to be ready at 7:15, you have to say 7 o'clock. So maybe you could be medayik that from the Gemara. This comes up from another question. My brother-in-law, Rabbi Yitzchak Grossman, wrote an essay on this. And he brought this raya about, what do they call it? where you say the opposite of what you want. Reverse psychology, that's it. Reverse psychology. So is reverse psychology wrong? So my wife is a very honest person, and she thinks it's totally dishonest to try to get the kids to do things with reverse psychology. I don't think I naturally have such compunctions, but she talked me into it. But is reverse psychology wrong? So maybe you could bring a raya from this Meiri and Chida that it would be okay, as long as you're not lying. Right? If I tell my kids, don't smile for the picture. Whatever you do, don't smile. So is that wrong? I'm manipulating them. But I'm not lying. So maybe you have a raya from the Meiri and the Chida to be Mako. But my wife still thinks that's perverse. It's manipulation. It's not right. You shouldn't just think that because they're kids, you can trick them. So that's an interesting, perhaps, extrapolation from that Gemara. Okay. So we will stop here, and Bezrat Hashem pick up next week. I was asked to...